You're listening to High Performance, and this is what we've got lined up today.
Code red aggression. I've gone into a door, burst into that door, straight away gone into the room, you know, finger on trigger, and I've seen women and children, you know, and that's when, and again, this is another prominent point in my life that I remember, that I knew that I wasn't a bully with a weapon. I knew that my emotional intelligence was really, really high, because just straight away when I saw it, boom, finger off trigger, how am I going to protect these women? How am I going to protect these children? Boom, boom, boom. Then I flick straight back into the next room and it'd be a fucking firefight again.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi there, I'm Jake Humphrey. You're listening to High Performance, the podcast that delves into the minds of some of the most successful athletes, visionaries, entrepreneurs, and artists on the planet, and aims to unlock the very secrets of their success. As ever, I'm not flying solo. Damien Hughes is with us today. It's fair to say you don't want to annoy today's guest, right?
I'm treading very, very carefully, Jake.
What are you most looking forward to finding out in the next little while?
I'm really interested on this idea of who tells you the truth beyond yourself, who really tells you the truth. And I think our next guest is going to give us some real fascinating insights on that.
I think you're right, because I think he's a man who certainly tells himself the truth. As far as I'm concerned, our guest is the epitome of high performance. A military career stretching back to his teens, the coveted King's Badge when he passed out as a Royal Marine before becoming a point man and a sniper in the Special Forces. He's now a TV presenter, public speaker, author. He even has his own brand, Bergamot and Amber Body Wash. Have you got your own brand body wash?
No, not quite.
You haven't made it in life. Only when you've got your own body wash have you made it in life. Please welcome to High Performance, Anthony Middleton. Anthony,
cheers, mate.
Nice to have you with us.
You know when you've made it. You know you've made it when you've got a body wash, right? And I've also got a beard balm as well.
Have you?
Yeah.
Do you wash with your own body wash?
Of course.
So you're in the shower in the morning.
It smells nice. My son nicks off me, I promise you. I did have quite a lot of input in it, actually, to be fair. So I made sure that it smelled good and it smelled manly.
I love it. What is your definition, Anthony, of high performance?
A self-belief. It's key to everything in life, I think. That comes with brutal honesty of oneself. You have to be honest with yourself. But self-belief only comes through realizing where your boundaries are, where your limitations are, suffering, hardship. It's one of those where failure, believe it or not, again, I don't want to sound too cliche, failure is the key to self-belief, because if you can fail and get back up and re-attack and fail and get back up and re-attack, but learn something every single time from that experience, you will eventually get there if you believe in it enough. And then once you start to get there, once you start to realize, actually, I'm a lot more resilient than I thought I was, self-belief starts to kick in. And once you nail self-belief, it almost, but to a point where it hits that ego line,
right?
That's when you can achieve amazing things. And that's when not much phases you, because you generally believe that you can achieve anything that you put your hand to. You know, I believe that if a human has done it in life, then I can achieve it, whether it's climbing to the top of the world, whether it's running 100 meters, you know, under 10 seconds. You know, I generally believe that if I train hard enough and I put the time and effort into it, that I could achieve that.
Because in your book, The Fear Bubble, you talk about people coming up to you saying, oh, you've changed.
Yeah.
And then you say, yeah, I have, because I am not the person I was when you knew me before, and I'm delighted that I'm not that person. And sadly, you are the same person. I'm interested to know, the Ant Middleton sitting in front of us now, are you now the product of hundreds and hundreds of little tiny moments? Or was there one explosion in your head where you went, that is the key. The door has just been opened. I see the light. There is the answer.
No, it's loads of little things that accumulate.
Do you remember when it first started? Because I bet at 16, if I'd have asked you that same question, you probably would have given me a completely different answer to high performance.
If you'd have told me where I was today when I was 16, I would have just laughed it off. You know, I was just a young 16-year-old that joined the military, you know, had a very bad military career, i.e. experience for my first 4 or 5 years, to the point where I left the army and then rejoined the Marines a couple of years later. It was just something that I believed that I was good at, that I could do. And I just chipped away at it.
So why weren't you high performance in those early military years?
I was, but I didn't fit in. I wasn't a team player. You know, I was almost wanted to be the best at everything. And when I was the best at stuff, anything I put my hand to, I was the best at, I'd be quite cocky and arrogant about it. What you do, you isolate yourself. And then, you know, obviously being in the military, a team player is what it's all about. And you can only get so far by yourself. And that's when I left the army and I thought to myself, do you know what? I've smashed the beginning of my army career. The reason why I didn't get on well was because the people were below me. I was better than everyone else. But what that does, you sort of hit a ceiling. You hit a plateau where you're just like, right, where else is there to go? And you actually need people around you to get you to that next level. And it was just a case of, I enjoyed what I'd done. I knew I was good at it, but something wasn't sitting right. And it was that moment of clarity that I had as a youngster. This was a moment of, say, my first stepping stone towards becoming an elite athlete or an elite individual, however you want to look at it. I was at the job centre and I left the army and I thought to myself, right, I'm going to go in and get, they're going to give me, you know, look at my report. My report was exemplary. I'm going to get whatever job I want. And I went in there and I left there without a job. Yeah. And I remember walking down the steps of the job centre when I was 22. And I sat down on the steps and I thought to myself, wow, how are you here? With everything that you've achieved and everything that you've done and that you know you're capable of, how you sat on the steps of a job centre, jobless. And I flipped that mirror on myself. It's the first time in my life that I was brutally honest with myself. And I just concentrated on all my negatives and insecurities. And it's like, my aunt, you're a big-headed little twat. That's why, you know, you're sat on these steps. You're not a team player. Your ego is, you know, is gone way over the line now, you know, from extreme confidence to ego.
Surely you'd been told this when you were in the army. Your colleagues were going, listen, you're a dick.
What? Yeah, but you don't listen to it. You're just like, yeah, I'm a dick, but I'm the first one. I'm always at the front of the runs, aren't I?
When I was reading your book, that very first day in the military when you did that run.
Yeah.
And you spoke about the idea that you put yourself at the front and you almost just went balls out and didn't stop until you came first. Mm. And it seems to me that just running was something you were doing for a long time. You were running away from something.
Yeah, I joined the military I was always self-sufficient. I always wanted to stand on my own 2 feet. I always excelled at what I'd done. But then I got bored of it. And then when I got bored of something, I'd put my hand at something else. I'd excel at that. And then I'd get bored of it. I could have been a footballer, but I was just got bored of it and just didn't enjoy doing it. And then I went into athletics. Again, you know, I was a sprinter. I got bored of it. It just gave me a sense of confidence. And I didn't realise it till later, but it gave me this sort of understanding that if I put my mind to something that I really enjoyed, it became obsessive to me. You know, I'd have this obsessive sort of addiction to perfecting it, to controlling it, to making it work for me, you know. So as I sort of chipped away throughout my childhood, you know, football, I could show you all the trophies, you know, everything that I've got. Athletics, the same. You know, then the military, best recruit, best PT at the age of 16. It's just like, you know, this is almost too easy. Then when I left the military and joined the Marines, King's Badgeman, and then, you know, I made my way up to sniper, selection, past selection the first time. All these small little events that happen, that is, they become bigger and bigger, and you're almost confirming what you already know. But that can be a very dangerous thing to do, because the moment you start confirming that you're the best at everything, that's when it starts trickling on. You know, the extreme confidence starts biting you in the ass, because you know your ego takes prominent place.
But does that not make you a dangerous soldier, though, with that sense of ego?
No, because I've never, when it comes to that side of things. And I talk about emotions, you know, I'm a very emotionally connected individual. There's a danger of, you know, people say, you thinking that you're the best. Yeah, never when I went into combat, into war, did I ever think that I'd get shot. Yeah. Never ever thought there's a soldier on that battlefield but that was better than me. Never in a million years. But that's why I always got on that helicopter on the way home. That's why I'm here today.
Right.
But there's this side to me, and I talk about this respectful, this polite, this compassionate side to me. You know, that that I have, you know, I know what's right and I know what's wrong, you know, and that's, again, it teeters on that edge of expertise where I'm either going to get it horribly wrong or horribly right, but I'm so emotionally connected that I get it right every single time. So, for example, you know, I've been into a firefight where I've breached a compound and the whole place has erupted and we've done what we needed to do in the compound. And then, you know, from that firefight, code red aggression, I've gone into a door, burst into that door, straight away gone into the room, you know, finger on trigger, and I've seen women and children, you know, and that's when, and again, this is another prominent point in my life that I remember, that I knew that I wasn't a bully with a weapon. I knew that my emotional intelligence was really, really high, because straight away when I saw it, boom, finger off trigger, how am I going to protect these women? How am I going to protect these children? Boom, boom, boom. Then I flick straight back into the next room and it'd be a fucking firefight again. But then I'd get straight back into that mode of, right, well, this flicking between the two. I'm either, you know, there's no sort of middle ground with me.
Where did that develop then, that emotional intelligence?
From a child. You know, my father passed away when I was 5 years old. And I talk about, you know, finding a positive in every negative. And as life has gone on, I've sort of found so many positives in my father's death. He died when I was 5 years old. And within a couple of weeks, a stepfather came into play. And we up and moved to France, you know, within 6 months. So obviously something had been going on before. But the magnitude of the situation was so overwhelming at that age. You can imagine, but I think at this stage I was six in France, new man in my life. Within 6 months, it's like, what the hell is going on? But what that allowed me to do, I remember just thinking, you know, almost the situation being so overwhelming that I literally just ignored it and cut it out of my life. And the thing that I could understand at 6 years old was what I could control was myself. So I started self-reflecting.
At six?
At six.
Wow.
I always used to self-reflect. Why am I feeling like this? What am I feeling?
You think that came from your dad's death? Leaving
1,000,000%.
So when I asked you earlier, your high-performance mindset, is it hundreds of little things or one moment?
Maybe,
Anthony, it was the moment when your dad died.
Yeah, when you look back on things like that in a way like that, yeah, it was, but it's just a sequence of events that has just fortified that. You know, the death of my father was that sort of point to the sort of earliest memory when I can just remember sort of having this out-of-body experience of, I couldn't even make sense of the world, you know what I mean? Because, you know, different language, different school, really isolated, different father, different, it's just like, phew. And I can remember having quite a good childhood, even though it was a different childhood. I remember having quite a good childhood because all I had to do was think about myself. And it's, that's why I talk about being someone that's self-sufficient. I always wanted to stand on my own 2 feet, always wanted to do, because I could be in control of that.
Were you being loved by your mum and your stepdad at that point?
Yeah, there wasn't, you know, don't get me wrong, the stepfather was, you know, he ruled with an iron fist, but they all did back then, so don't begrudge any of that, and it toughened me up as a lad. But you know, this hard exterior that you build, you know, it's one of those where I believe that, you know, you're set in stone from quite a young age, and that's who you are.
But then who would you say knows the real Ant? So ultimately, there'll be two or three people, I imagine, in your life that know when you take all that armour and that different person's off?
No one, apart from myself. Yeah.
Hold on, I can't let that go.
No.
Not your wife?
No.
Not your mum?
No, don't talk to my mum.
So
my wife knows probably 80-85%.
What does she not know?
I don't allow anyone to ever enter that space.
Why not?
Because my space is one of those where, you know, there's stuff that you must keep, you know, that you must keep to yourself. There's thought processes that you must manage. It's one of those where if you spoke out loud with your thought process, or you let people in to a certain level of emotion, then there's nothing positive that's going to come out of it.
Right.
So why do it? And I'm very much like that. You know, I'm a very, very positive thinker. It's only because I've dealt with so much negativity in my life that the levels of negativity that I've witnessed, done, and been exposed to, if you don't think positively in those situations, then probably wouldn't be here today. I'd probably, you know, be in a different headspace. I'd probably be in a different, you know, a different career. It's just about knowing yourself as well. And that's to a point where you do know yourself, where you this is what people need to know. This is what people don't need to know. This is what I never let out of my locker, right? Because this is the...
And is there an edge of loneliness to you because you've not totally exposed yourself?
Yeah, I would say I'm still a loner. You know, I'm still a loner in that type of way. You know, I've got a lot of acquaintances and I've got a lot of friends, but, you know, when... You talk about my social life, you know, I'll just tap up one of those guys and go, or girls, and go out with them. But I don't let anyone sort of too close, if that makes sense.
So there was an area that really intrigued me that I wanted to ask you about, but I'm going to do this while treading very carefully in the way that I ask you.
Please crack on.
I'm lucky enough that I've been around lots of individual athletes that have been high performers, and what intrigues me about them is that there's a concept in Roman times that the emperors used to have a guy that their title was the memento mori, somebody that would be on your shoulder reminding you that you're human and you're vulnerable and not to get carried away with your own success. And I can see that these loners, these individual sportsmen, sometimes can get seduced by success, seduced by ego and all the trappings of everything. Who's the guy on your shoulder saying to you, aren't you being a dick, aren't you getting carried away, aren't you, your ego's out of control here?
Myself, and it's through, I'm not scared to fail. I'm not scared to do that. I don't really care what anyone thinks. I don't really care, you know. It's one of those where I'm not scared to take on, to commit to failure.
But we all have blind spots as well that sometimes lead us to trip up and fall. And as somebody that is trained in the art of efficiency, in the nature of what you do, would it not be more efficient to have one or two people that you would allow into that orbit that could maybe help you avoid tripping up?
Yeah, but it's like, it's almost someone telling you about yourself. You know, I believe that no one should know yourself better than yourself. I've been in situations where I've been forced to act, where I've been surprised what I'm capable of. Being in combat,
right?
You know, you talk about that fight or flight mode, or you talk about, you know, having to do what you need to do to get the job done, and it's just like, that was remarkably easy. Then it just allows me to put myself into this position where, yeah, I want to be the first man through the door.
Does that bother you, though?
I want to be this mind sweeping, this minefield. Who wants to do it? Yeah, I do. You know, I remember fucking the first thing when someone said, and there's probably about a kilometre of minefield to who, you know, what team wants to do it, and I put my hand up straight away and I just thought to myself, fucking hell, why did I do that? And when I got on the ground, I was just like, I was loving fucking minesweeping, knowing that this, you know what I mean? But these are the things that I didn't realise that I was capable of until I put myself in those situations. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I put myself in these situations thinking, what have you done? And this is it. But then I think to myself, that when it's done, I'm like, I'm so glad I done that. You know, I'm so glad I was first man on the target. I'm so glad that I went through that. And then I realise how I can deal with it. And I see the effects it has on some other people. And it's not a case for me going, let me go in, I'm better than you. I'm like, listen, I'll probably deal with this better than you.
Do you go through that and then think, am I normal? Let's say you've killed someone and 5 minutes later you're having a game of cards, you feel fine. Other soldiers might have to go and decompress and go for counselling, whatever they do. Sounds like you don't need to do that. And I wonder whether you're totally comfy with that, or whether you think, I remember going through a period where I thought I was mentally ill when I was younger and went to counselling. It was a good thing to do. I was just sort of having a weird period as a teenager. I don't think you've probably never gone there, have you? You've never...
Now, why would you talk to someone about something that's going on in your head? And again, you will only tell yourself what, you know, you'll only be as honest and open with yourself than you want to be. You know, you can have someone pressing all these triggers and...
No, see, you challenge that, Ant, because I think there's something about... It's the Einstein quote that the mindset that creates a problem, it can't always be the mindset that solves the problem. And somebody else being able to come in with an alternative view might help you get there quicker. I agree with the idea you've still got to unlock it.
Yeah, probably help you get there quicker. But, you know, sometimes there's not a problem and people are like, you know, people make a problem out of it. And you're just like, I'm perfectly fine with it. It's almost this day and age where it's not okay to be okay.
Yeah.
Now, people say to me, and you've been through some, how are you not messed up? I'm like, because I'm not. And again, my sympathy goes out. And I've seen people that, you know, suffer from PTSD, and it's horrendous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got massive sympathy for that. I've got friends, good friends that suffer from it. But, you know, I don't. And, you know, should I? You know, you almost, you know, when people
should
talk to you,
it's like... regard those people, like, how do you perceive somebody that's suffering from PTSD then? Do you regard that as their own fault, that they're unable to process what they experienced?
Yeah, I just, I think a key one is acknowledging the situation for what it is. You know, it's like, if someone's died, well, guess what? They're dead. You know, acknowledge that it's like there's nothing you can do about that. You can put all the negativity, you can go, you go through the process of mourning, acceptance, blah, blah, blah. There's stepping stones to get you to where you need to be. But it's just, you know, people ask themselves questions about, well, what should have happened, this would have, should have, could. That's not the real world, and that world does not exist. Why do you even dip into that world? It's like, acknowledge, like, what's the one thing I can't do is bring that person? What's the one thing I change my actions to bring that person? What's the one thing I can't rewind time? I can't.
You so realise, like, that is how 99% of minds operate. Mm. They allow themselves to go there all the time.
If you go back to the example of you sweeping the minefield, then there's a kilometre of minefield ahead of you. At what stage would you think about your wife and children of, if I make a mistake, if I trip up here and get this wrong?
I wouldn't.
You compartmentalise that.
I still do that nowadays, you know. When I'm at work, you know, I'm at work, don't disturb me. Unless my children are in hospital, unless there's something, an emergency, then don't bring in any distractions, 1 or 2 or 3 or 5% distractions into my work. Let me focus 100% on my work, because that way I will achieve what I need to achieve. Sure. And also, when it does go wrong, okay, I can't blame that 1 or 2% or 3%. I've only got one person to look at. And that's myself. No excuses. So I don't allow any of those distractions to come into my life, into my work, because ultimately that's what happens with people. If I do get it right or wrong, if I make the right decision or the wrong decision, well, guess what? I can take ownership of that because there's no distraction. And then once you take ownership of it, you can process what's gone wrong. Then you can execute what needs to be done and move on. Right. But it's like, the more distractions you have in your life, the more, you know, excuses that you have to pin stuff to, then the more you're going to think negatively, the more you're going to, you know, you're going to trick yourself, the more you're going to fool yourself. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
It's my elite mindset of, I focus on myself. What do I need to change?
But my question then is around, before you make that commitment to go in and do whatever it is you're going to face, is at what stage before you make that commitment, do you think, you know, I'm a different person, I'm evolving all the time, and I'm now a father, I'm now a husband, and therefore I probably won't put myself into that situation that might end up with my early demise.
Yeah.
So how do you square that circle?
Well, now I'm getting better and better at that. The thing that really sort of pushed home was Everest.
Yeah.
You know, when I done Everest, I went up during the storm, and I can remember halfway through, once I'd done my rotations, the cameraman said, "Ant, you're making it look too easy. You know, you've never been above 6,000 meters before." He said, "Look, you," and then lo and behold, this storm comes in. So I'm like, "We're going up during the storms." He's like, no, listen, I said, you know, you can't go up during the storms. It's like, I'm like, no, listen, follow me up during the storms.
What was that about? I've read your book about that. Why that, in the storm? Why not
because,
wait for the next day?
Well, hundreds of people have stood on the summit of Mount Everest on a nice sunny day. I don't want to take the easy option. You know, why would I want to stand on the summit of the world on a nice sunny day? And
well,
go, here,
the answer
here.
Is because one day you might find the limit, and the limit might be death.
Yeah, but I haven't found that yet, so
don't have to worry about that. Don't keep looking for it. What's your wife's name?
Emily.
So does Emily say Anthony?
Yeah, no, after
come
that.
Come on, man. You've got kids and me to think about.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I get that you've driven yourself relentlessly and remorselessly, but then you've chosen to go into team environments. So whether it was in the military, you're an elite individual going into a team environment where not everybody does share the same mentality. And I'd class even your family to go and like have a family with Emily.
Yeah.
Is then you become a team player. So where's that evolution happened for you?
Yeah, that's getting in. I was a very selfish person that had my priorities wrong. You know, when I was in the military, I prioritised the military. My family and children came second.
And do you now feel that you're good enough, right, without having to validate yourself with achievements?
Mm. I'm definitely at a stage.
Like, if you achieve nothing else for the next 50 years, I know you're the kind of guy that likes to achieve stuff. Yeah. Would you still be a content person?
No, I've realised more and more, I'd probably say over the last 3 or 4 years, the importance of a team, especially when I'd say your body starts to sort of suffer a bit more. But I'm not worried about that, but I obviously acknowledge it. Even when I was at my most fittest in the special forces, you know, you have to be an athlete plus standard of fitness to pass selection. Fact, my mind has always seemed fitter. Has always seemed to be the driving force of. I never saw myself as an athlete, even though I was at that status. But it was because it's my mind that was always evolving. But now that I'm in a completely different career, completely different headspace, and I realised, you know, what I used to do wasn't normal. It's one of those where I jumped in the deep end with dive boots on, and I'm having to rely on my team now to keep my head above water. Because I've still got that mindset and that sort of way of, you know, just tackle everything head on, just be honest and say you're on. They're like, whoa, when? This doesn't quite work like that out here. People do appreciate that, but this day and age in society, you've got to let us take lead on it. That's what I've struggled with the last couple of years, is to really let go of certain bows, of certain strings on my bow, and go, do you know what, you can take charge of that, you can take, but to a point where I'm still even a nightmare about it, you know, I still crawl up that rope and pop my head up and go, right, are you managing this quickly?
What are you worried about then? What do you not?
I'm not worried about anything. I just like things done properly. You know, I like things done properly. I like to be transparent about things, and I like to be honest about things. And a sad state of affairs that we're finding ourselves in this day and age is honesty is classed as bullying. Right, so you're being honest, and all of a sudden you can't say that, and because you're being.
Is it how you deliver the honesty, though, or do you think we're in a place now where just telling someone I disagree with you is not even telling someone I disagree, but telling,
listen, you're useless at your job. I suggest you find another job. And again, that's the way society goes. And I talk about it, you know, I have a prime example of levels of standards that are just dropping more and more and more. Because nowadays, you know, rather than messing up at work and me, for example, pulling into the office and going, bloody hell, that was horrendous. What were you thinking of? You know, you've got one more chance. If not, you're out the door. Nowadays, they bring them in and go, you know, you could have done better. It was okay. But you could have done better. You know, maybe next time think, you know, all this mollycoddling and pampering. But all of a sudden, what that does, it engages your brain where you know you haven't been up to scratch, or you know that you didn't do that correctly, or your standards have dropped. But then people are going, no, it's okay. You know, don't worry about it. Just make sure you tackle it in this way. Let's talk about it. Let's go through it. And all of a sudden, when you get multiple people like that tell you that, you go, oh, right, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Maybe that was okay. You know, even though you're lying to yourself, right? Because, you know, like, no, that was shit. I should have done a lot better. But people are saying, actually, it's not too bad. You know, it was, you know, you didn't so much fail, but yeah, you did fail. And then what you do, your standards drop and 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 drop to a level that's not acceptable. And then all of a sudden, someone comes in and tells you, you get what happens? You become offended. You start to pass the blame. There's a whole knock-on effect to not being honest. And when I'm talking about being honest, I'm talking about, yeah, there is a way of saying it, but being brutally honest. Black and white. Did you achieve what you... No. Why didn't you achieve what you... Because your performance was horrendous.
You see, I see all of that on a weekly basis in the world that I existed in, that elite sports world. That is still how that world works. If you're not good enough to make the Arsenal first team, you are out of the door.
Yeah.
If you are a goalkeeper and the ball goes through your legs, you are not just criticised by the manager and the players, but everyone around you. Mm. And it's one of these things that I don't think that we give elite individuals the credit that they deserve. I think that
100%.
Everyone would love to be a professional footballer, a professional Formula One driver, a special forces soldier. I honestly believe 99.9% of people could not push themselves to the limits you need to go to get there. Like Wayne Rooney's lazy people say, right, you've probably not trained one day in your life as hard as he's trained every single day to play professional sport. We all sit and we all criticise happily, don't we, and think everyone's useless. But very few people really can get themselves into that elite space, I think.
And it's a mindset. It's an elite mindset. And do you know what? I don't like to use that word elite, because elite for me is just doing the basics to a high standard consistently. Right, and you try doing the basics to a high standard consistently. That's very, very hard to do.
Can everyone be a high performance person?
Yeah, they can. I generally believe that, but it's just the mindset that lacks. It's like you can train. I could go away right now. I could give you a training program to go away, train for a year. You could probably be, you know, if you had the time and money, you could probably be the fittest man on earth.
I would also argue that we all bring a certain base level of talent to the table. So,
absolutely.
So say I could run the 100 metres in 12 seconds and I believe I could train and I could get better from that base level of talent that I have. But I don't believe that I could match up against the 100 metres Olympic finalists.
I know, but it's one of those. I haven't sprinted for about 22 years. And the first sprint I done with USN was against a sprinter. I got 12 seconds. And again, it all goes down to mindset on how you absorb, how you learn the techniques. It's like once I engulf myself into something, you know, I'm obsessed with it. You know, like people, when I left the special forces, you know, I've always been in trouble. You know, when I go out drinking, you know, always never be the bully, but I'd always find myself getting in trouble. And they used to say, and you're one of these annoying people that are good at everything, but you're also good at getting in trouble. It's because, you know, when I went out, if someone started a fight with my mate, it'd just be, drinking wouldn't matter anymore. It'd just be like, right, we need to sort this situation out. And it's like, you know, so I've got an addictive personality, but I've also seen the negative sides to that. You know, my addictive personality I've ended up in prison. I've ended up in prison cells. I've ended up heavily drinking. I've ended up fighting. I've ended up, you know, it's got its negative effects to it as well. I don't just think, right, what I put my mind at, I can achieve. It's like when I find myself in a situation that I'm enjoying and I'm like, you know, I used to drink till the fucking cows come home. You know, you wouldn't outdrink me, you know, talk about a negative, you know, and then all of a sudden the alcohol starts to get a grip of you and you're like, well, I need to rein this in. You know, being honest with yourself, you're like, woo.
So where did the self-awareness, the willingness to look at yourself and go, you know what, there's a pattern of drinking here that's leading me into trouble.
Do you know what? It's when I was at a funeral for a pal in the Royal Marines. And obviously, you know, I say obviously, but you drink heavily in the Marines, you know, it's all about weekends and, you know, when you're on camp anyway. And I can remember being at a funeral and just asking this person where this person was that was dead. You know, and I remember thinking, I was like, where is so-and-so? And they're looking at me as a complete lunatic. They were like, what the hell are you on about? I'm like, well, where is he? Come on, fucking hell. He's meant to be part of the group. And then I just remember saying his name and then thinking, fuck, he's dead.
So were you drunk or were you...
Yeah, I was drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was drunk. I thought to myself, wow, alcohol, you know, made me... You know, I've always been aware when I've been drinking. I've always been and it got to a point where I was starting to forget, or I was starting to, you know, be a useless drunk, shall we say, you know, I've always been self-aware like that. And that was one of the first moments I thought, man, you're drinking too much, mate, because what the hell? And after I said that and I realised what I said, I fucked off. I left the party. It's almost like a, whoa, and you need to go because you're not in control of yourself.
See, that's the other thing. If you're really brutally honest with yourself, you punish yourself, I guess, when you know that you've overstepped the mark.
Do you still drink now?
Occasionally, yeah. I won't go out and get smashed, no. But it's one of those where alcohol has done nothing but bring negativity to my life. And again, I've never had a problem with it, but, you know, I'll drink and it'd be fine. And then, you know, some things will happen and it's just like, wow, it's just, that's due to alcohol. That's due to me not being myself and not thinking by...
See, but that's really interesting because you say you've never had a problem and yet you also attribute that's what led you to a prison cell.
Yeah, so, but it's holding up, you know, it's being accountable for your actions. I got into a fight and I ended up badly hurting someone, and yeah, the alcohol was to blame for my decision making, but it wasn't to blame for my actions. You know, it's like, do I deserve to go to prison? Absolutely. Will I do my time? Have I got any excuses? No. You know, and again, you know, when I went to prison, I just left the military. And I remember my lawyer, he was rubbing his hands. He was like, "And you've just left the military, haven't you?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "How long ago?" I went, "6 months ago." He went, "Brilliant." He said, "How many tours of Afghanistan do you do?" I said, "3." He went, "What, recent?" I went, "Yeah, just literally just, you know, got back not long ago." He was like, "Excellent." He's like, "And do you want to go to prison?" I'm like, "Of course I don't want to go to prison." He's like, "Well, you've got PTSD." And I'm like, what do you mean I've got PTSD?" He said, "And he said, if you say you got PTSD, this is exact words, he went, "I promise you, you will not go to prison." He said, "I'll write a report, you'll get a slap on the wrist." He said, "I guarantee you, with what you've done in your background," he said, "you go off, you do a course," and said, "you'll be at home with your family." And I looked at him, I said, I can't do that. I haven't got PTSD. I can't say that. I said, I got drunk. And I said, I ended up in a fucking fight, ended up hurting someone. I deserve to be in prison. Let me do my time. And that's exactly what I done. I went to prison, done my time.
How long did you do?
I got sentenced to 14 months. So wow. I done.
And you're saying you booked the minute they shut the cell door.
Yeah.
Positive mindset.
Yeah, exactly. No, the moment the hammer went down. I remember the moment the hammer. My wife was there, and I just said to her, "I said, I love you. I'll see you soon." And I talk about priorities just being different. Now prioritize. You know, the same common denominator every single time, whether it's positive or negative. One person that's always there, and it's my wife. And I'm just like, wow, listen, if not only do I owe it to myself, but listen, I owe it to you.
She's special, huh?
And and that's when I got out, you know, my life started turning around. You know, I started focusing my energy on everything positive. That's when I really made that positive and negative changes. Like, is anything positive? No, don't do it. Could there be a negative? Yeah, well, don't do it. You know, last 5-6 years, I've cut off all my friends. I've cut off all, you know, I bounce between work and family, work and family, work and family. I prioritize family now, but also work comes very close. If one suffers, the other's going to suffer. And I don't allow that social life to come into play because it's too much of a temptation. And what I mean by it's too much of a temptation, it's like, of course I want to go out and have fun. Of course I want to go. Is anything positive going to come out of it necessarily? No. But that's what I love about life. It's like I need to make the mistakes to learn. And then when I learn, I grow. And when I grow, I become a better version of myself. I'm more aware. I'm wiser. I'm more, you know, I learn more about myself.
Yeah. I'm interested in, because you're a father as well.
Yeah.
And I'm conscious that people listening to this podcast will be sort of thinking about it from that lens. Mm-hmm. You've almost eradicated vulnerability from your life. Whether that's you've armor plated yourself physically or mentally to do that. And yet your children are having to go through situations that inevitably lead to vulnerability, whether it's starting a new school or doing a new sport or a new activity. Yeah. How do you help them on their journey?
I push them into doing things they don't want to do. You know, look, I think we've become a nation of lazy parenting. When something won't go right at school and it's come back, where it's not your fault, it's their fault. It's, you know, we don't spend enough time with our children. We don't spend enough time pushing them and forcing them into stuff. You know, I force my children to do stuff, whether they like it or not. And I'm only forcing them through love and through personal development. There's nothing malicious in it. There's nothing negative in it. I'm forcing. I know you don't want to do that, son, but you're going to do it. Bosh, you know, whether I push him into climbing a ladder, whatever, and then he gets to the top of the ladder, he's like, "It's not that bad, is it?" But if I didn't have forced you to do that, you wouldn't know what you're capable of. And swimming, you know, so my son was like, just pushed him into the shallow end, you know, knowing that my wife's that side, and you know, and he's like, "No, boom, boom." Well, actually, and then I jumped in there and held him in the water. I'm like, it's not that bad, is it, son? And, you know, they've got the parents that are nodding their heads, and I can't get them out of the water now. I can, you know, it's like, and again, people say, well, that could have had a negative. I don't live in that world. Could have, should have, would have. It didn't have a negative effect.
What
I know
if, though,
what I'm
your
doing.
Son,
you know, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like,
what if he wants to be something different though? Like I you talk in your book about getting him to do karate, he gets a smack in the face and a bloody nose. Like maybe your Absolutely. Son just wants to be a painter and doesn't want to be a combat. You did, and that was great for you. But your son's not you, is he?
Yeah. No, when he's, you know, it's one of those where if I see that he's not enjoying it, then I won't sort of force the issue. But you know,
so you're like, not forcing them to do certain things. You're teaching them that sometimes in life the only way through it is right through the middle. Some resilience.
If I push him into the water and I've got nothing of it, then I wouldn't keep pushing him into the water. You know, it's like, but I force him to do stuff just so they can go, right, I like that or I don't like that. And you know, some things I get right, some things I get wrong. But everything that I do is just through love. You know, and I always say to people, do what the hell you want to do. I said, as long as it's, your actions aren't malicious, and you don't go out to offend, then you're always going to offend someone. You're always going to upset a situation. Do not let those distractions come in. In your heart of hearts, if you think that's the right thing to do and you don't think, do it. And you'll find out whether it's right or wrong. And if it's right, well, guess what? You keep doing it. If it's wrong, change it up. But, you know, or if it's, you know, if it's, and that's what I say to my children. I say, you know, stay innocent, stay pure, because listen, it won't be like that for your whole life. And you'll soon learn what's right and what's wrong. And I'll be there to guide you through it. But I will be pushing you, and I will be forcing you to do a lot of things that you don't like. And I guarantee you, when you have children, you'll do the complete opposite of what I didn't like and what I did, you know, and the complete opposite of what you did like. And that's how evolution goes on. But I think that we as parents don't hold up to our responsibilities of being honest with our children, you know, letting them know that, you know, listen, there's two sides to every story, this whole blame culture. And you know, I spend the time that I am with my children, I sit down with them. People find it weird that I sit down and I talk to my son, and all of a sudden he's out in the garden climbing a tree and just in his boxer shorts, because I've gone to him, well, go on then, if you think you're that tough, go out there. And people are like, what's he doing? I'm like, don't worry about him, he's fine. You know, he's climbing the tree in his boxer shorts, because I've just, you know, told him, you know, that if you set your mind to things and, you know, take each step at a time, you know. And I just think as in society now, we're in danger of becoming a nation of lazy parents and lazy adults, you know, because adults are acting like children and children are acting like babies. You know, it's like, adults, come on. Do you know what I mean? Be an adult. You know, people are looking up to you. Lead by example. You know, it's like, that's what, more adults that I see acting like children. No wonder children, teenagers acting like babies. Of course, it's going in the reverse effect, because it starts from the top and it trickles all the way down. You know, and unfortunately, we still have this generation of our granddads who are hardened, sort of resilient, sort of individuals that have passed it on to our generation. But I think it's so important that we keep that. And again, we move along with the times. I'm all for that. 100% move along with it. But we keep this old school resilience that have made us the people we are today.
Listen, thank you so much for your time. I'm a firm believer in people separating fault and responsibility. We constantly look at fault, we don't take responsibility. I believe in the growth mindset. I hate the victim culture, and I believe that you 100% take responsibility for every single thing that happens in your life, right?
Positive or
negative. But you are so many miles ahead of me. It's unbelievable. I came into this thinking I've got this nailed, man. Jeez, I've got a long journey to go on. Before we go, we've got a few really quick questions that we want to just throw your way. It won't take very long. Just sort of a short, quick fire thing. Good. 3 non-negotiable behaviours that you and the people around you must buy into.
Punctuality, manners, and first impressions. I think that they go a long way. You know, don't tip up in rag order, at least be presentable.
What advice would you give a teenage aunt that was just starting out?
I would say let more people in. Just, you know, I'm figuring that out in the later years of my life, and I think I'd be a lot more advanced if I'd allowed that to happen at a younger age. So it'd definitely be, you know, let more people, whether it's a mentor, whether it's, you know, people that are generally interested in developing you. I wish I would have done that at an earlier age.
Are you happy?
Extremely. It's strange because, you know, when you're in your job, when I was in the Special Forces, I thought I was made for that. But now I'm in this job, I believe that this is my belonging, this is my calling. I feel out of everything that I've done in my life, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
How important is legacy to you?
I think, you know, if I can leave, you know, a solid foundation for my children to build on, which I didn't have, then we've done our work.
And the final question for people listening to this, your one piece of advice for them to live a more high-performance life?
Just think positively. You know, we live in a society full of negativity. Be brutally honest with yourself. If you're brutally honest with yourself, it allows you to be brutally honest with other people. And if you find yourself in a negative situation, you cannot tackle that negative situation with a negative mindset. If you lie to yourself, you're going to live a lie.
Damien.
Jay.
That was fascinating. I mean, you know, we say that a lot, but what really stood out for me was that he has, as far as I can tell, an absolutely rock solid, unshakable belief in his own mindset. And that's a difficult place to get to. But I imagine if he genuinely believes everything he's just told us, it must also be a lovely place to be.
Lovely and lonely.
Yes,
was the other word. I agree, that sense of that you are everything you could ever possibly need must be quite self-satisfying, but equally to look around and think that not everybody else matches up to you must sometimes lead into some quite lonely places, I imagine.
Because we all, don't we, spend our time wanting to just believe in ourselves 100%. He's managed to get to that place. So when he left the room just now, did you feel jealous of him, or are you glad you have your mindset?
I think there was aspects of Ant that I really admired that I think I could do with a bit more of that. For example, that sort of relentless positivity would serve us all well. But there was other aspects of the ability to fit within a group, whether that's a family or a team. I think he struggles with that more, and I think that sense of loneliness isn't something that I would envy. What about yourself?
Do you know what? I actually quite like the journey of not being perfect. Part of the reason I wanted to do this podcast, right, is that I think that I'm pretty good at being positive. I spend a lot of my time talking to other people about positivity. I've spent my life around elite athletes who have only got where they've got to with genuine belief in themselves and real dedication. And I know that I'm not there yet. And I think if I was where Ant was, I might be thinking, well, where next? Like, I'm sort of made it. You know, he believes in absolutely everything he does, whereas I quite enjoy the journey of finding out a bit more about myself. And I know that I'm not perfect. And I don't think I know a perfect person. I think he probably would see himself mentally as perfect, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think that's really astute point. And I think one thing that didn't come from Ant, and I understand given the extremes of the worlds that he's existed in, was that sense of vulnerability is what makes us human.
And I think he would say he's not vulnerable though, wouldn't he?
Yeah, very much. I think he would perceive vulnerability as a weakness as opposed to part of our humanity. And whilst I liked his point about being seriously honest with people that don't match up and giving people that sense of strident feedback, you're not good enough, you need to get better, I also think there's something about doing that with an element of kindness and an empathy and a decency that Ant didn't articulate that. I'm not saying he doesn't do it, but he didn't articulate it.
I bet he does do it, actually. Because I think you've got to take people along for the ride, whether you're in a military setting or like he is now in a media setting. People in my industry talk a lot. I've only ever heard good things about him as a person, interestingly. He's a really charming, kind, friendly, which is almost at odds, isn't it, with that, you've got to be like me. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. And I think that from what you're describing, how people speak about him, gives you the evidence of the emotional intelligence that he says he possesses in abundance. I think he was giving us the performance bit as opposed to the human element of how you bring people with him.
You know what? He's almost a perfect soldier, isn't he? When he talks about his mindset and everything he's been through, it's almost like this is how he is. And he's tailored everything in his life to fit with the kind of person that he is, and my goodness, so successful now, of clearly an incredible soldier. He was in the Special Forces, for goodness sakes, and he's learned his lessons along the way. Remarkable.
Well, there's a lovely phrase Alex Ferguson uses. He used to say to the players in the dressing room at Manchester United, you should look to your left and right and you should be really proud that those people are going into battle with you. And that phrase sort of resonated when I was thinking of Ant. I was thinking, you imagine being outside a door where you're about to walk into a firefight. I think you would get a sense of calm and reassurance that he was on your shoulder. And I think that's probably the greatest testimony to that mindset that he's shared with us today.
Wow, what a guy Ant Middleton is. If you enjoyed that, I'd love it if you could leave a review for us. And of course, please subscribe to High Performance. I promise it's worth it. Thanks so much to Tom Griffin from Rethink Audio for his help. And do keep an eye across my socials for details of the next episode. Till then, thanks a lot.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.